Welcome to another edition of Fantasy Sports Today, coming at you live from here inside the Fantasy Sports Network studios in Toronto. I'm Chris Meany. Thanks for taking the time to hang out. Riding solo again today. I can get used to this. A nice little slow zoom there from Mikey. What am I, Gabe Morency with the camera shout-outs? I mean, no hats here, Mikey. No toys. What's going on, man? Speaking of Gabe Morency, I was just talking to him. He wants me to come in and talk Morency Unfiltered today. Anytime there's like some Eagles news, Angels news, he wants to rip me on. He always brings me in. But he found a wicked prop, and just watch for it later on Fantasy Sports Network. Just Alshon Jeffrey to sign with the Eagles plus 787. I don't know if he's going to sign there, but I know that they're going to be all in because they need some help. Enough talk with Gabe Morency. We got Gerrion Thorne. Yeah, with Gerrion Thorne, host of rotation, hot roster. He's going to jump in. He's got his overall ranks. We're going to dig deep into 1 through 30. He's got them all the way up to 100. So there's some interesting guys in there. Trey Turner, Jonathan Villar. I know people are probably sick of hearing about these guys, but I mean, they're top 30 players, and they were not last year. So we're going to really just dig deep into some of those numbers. Plus, high stakes week will continue. Glenn Lowy, he's a 2-time Fantasy Cup winner. He's a Fantasy Football World Champion. A lot of questions for him and just how he sees, you know, some of these big-time players, how they approach their drafts. We'll talk to him in just a little bit. But first, some news off the top. Yesterday, we talked about DeMarcus Cousins and how that deal was finalized for the Kings and Pelicans. And then shortly after that deal was finalized, the Lakers, they made some moves. As you see there, Magic Johnson named president of the Los Angeles Lakers. Jim Buss, he's gone. Mitch Kupchak, he's gone. GM, some big-time changes. If you're a Lakers fan, you need to be excited about this because that's positive news. Magic Johnson now in charge of just operations. And he already made a move. He made two moves. So he made a hiring, a GM, which is Kobe Bryant's agent. We're talking about Rob Pelinka here, who's also an agent for a lot of players in the NBA. James Harden, 20 other guys, Avery Bradley. And then he goes and makes another move, and it's Lou Williams. Lou Williams traded to the Houston Rockets, 2017 first-round pick, headed the other way, along with Corey Brewer. Lou Williams having a pretty good season, averaging over 18 points per game, a nice little piece. I suppose it would have been better if he went to maybe the Wizards. He goes to the Houston Rockets, where he actually fits in nicely because this is a player who can't play any defense and can shoot the three. So he just fits in nicely with, you know, Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, of course, James Harden. But Lou Williams, this is a fantastic ad. So just look for maybe the Lakers to make some more moves. And this is what we're talking about here. Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, in charge of teams. You know, you probably grew up watching these guys, and now they're going to make some trades. So that's interesting stuff. Just keep an eye on this whole Lakers situation because there's going to be some more moves to be made. Let's switch gears. Let's talk some baseball. Zach Britton, one of the best closers in the game. He's dealing with maybe there's some reports. It's not official, but they're not really worried about the Orioles with an oblique injury. But if this is, an oblique injury that we've seen before from pitchers, he could be sidelined for several weeks. That's really going to change how you go about your drafts, I'm sure. NFBC has him as the 56th player off the board, closer number 3. The last 3 seasons, he has 120 saves. You see there, 47 saves. That's not, I didn't see the ground ball percentage there, my bad. But ground ball percentage, this isn't a misprint what I got on my paper. 81% last year, 81%. 79 the year before that, 75 the year before that. He is awesome. A 0.54 ERA. That is not a misprint. Just keep an eye on this whole situation. If he was to go down, Brad Brock is somebody I drafted, FSTA, in Nashville about a month ago now, 10K per 9, solid ERA and ground ball rate the past couple years. So keep an eye on the situation again. Britton is one of the best closers in the game. Going to stick with closers because there were some reports I read before I came on here about David Robertson being potentially traded to the Washington Nationals. You know, the Nationals have been involved in trying to get a closer the entire offseason. Sean Kelly stepped in, and he was nice when he did step in, but let's be honest here, Sean Kelly is not fantastic. So David Robertson is very, very interesting. He's got 2 years left, $25 million he's owed. Maybe in the World Baseball Classic, maybe Washington scouts him a little bit more and they see what he's all about. But Nate Jones needs to be on your radar for sure. Nate Jones was drafted in the FSTA. I would draft him way ahead of his ADP right now. 2016, he outdid Robertson. 10K per 9, fewer than 2 walks per 9, solid ground ball rate, better ERA. So he's actually a really, really good option if you're missing out on saves and you just want somebody, because we all know that these closers just come out of nowhere and they appear midway through the season, trades, injuries, series, Nate Jones definitely needs to be on your roster for sure. Sticking with baseball and the Washington Nationals, Matt Wieters signed a two-year contract with the Nationals, reportedly worth $21 million, pending a physical. Nothing is official just yet, but we've been waiting for Matt Wieters to sign with the team. And yeah, it's okay. It's not Baltimore. It's not a great hitter's ballpark. It's a nice division. You're going to go up against some mediocre pitching at times, you know, apart from the Mets if they can keep their staff healthy. But Matt Wieters is probably arguably a top 12 catcher the rest of the way. You saw 17 home runs. It's not bad. You know, he was rumored to go to Texas. I know they had Luke Roy there, but he could play first. You know, now they got Napoli. He was rumored to go to Tampa Bay. He was rumored to go to some maybe better ballparks. But this is okay. It could be worse. And then we'll finish up with Alex Rodriguez, who announced that he will not resume playing Major League Baseball. Too bad, I guess. You know, we missed you. You were good. You had a great career. It's over now. Actually, you know what I would like to see from A-Rod is just to be an analyst. I saw him during the postseason, and I actually thought he was terrific. I thought he was fantastic analyzing pitchers, especially a guy like Chapman, who we had seen before, what he expects from guys. So it was just sitting back and watching him and listening to him, a whole new respect for him. His playing career was pretty good, too. I'm not going to lie. PEDs aside. Okay, Gary Thorne is in here next. We're talking about the top 30 overall baseball players. His top 30, Trout, Betts, and then who's next? It's not Brian. I'll tell you who next on FST. Welcome back inside the Fantasy Sports Network studios. Gary and Thorne, missed you, buddy.
Hey.
We talk baseball in the office. We don't get to talk in front of the cameras anymore.
I know. It's because Ashley's here and doesn't like me.
I know. I'm riding solo here, and I don't mind it. But we do miss her a little bit. Just a little bit, in case she's watching from Australia.
Hi, Ashley. Is it upside down there?
Probably not. Okay. Host of Hot Roster and Rotation already released his MLB rankings, you know, all over the Roto Experts package as well. Exclusive Edge. Roto Experts
Fantasy
package.
Baseball.
That's what it's
something,
all about. RotoExperts.com is where you can get it. Garen's done a bunch of writing. So we're going to release his top 30, which you've already done with Pat Mayo, but that's okay. I'm not going to pick apart your rankings like perhaps on the Pat Mayo Hour.
I would say you would know more about baseball than any of the people I was talking to on that particular show, so this could be more interesting.
I don't know. Tim Anderson, he knows his stuff, right? Okay, here we go. 1 through 10. This is the top 10 overall for Gary and Thorne. No surprise here. Mike Trout, Mookie Betts, Jose Altuve, Chris Bryant, Nolan Arenado. We got Goldschmidt, Kershaw, first pitcher off the board, Harper, Donaldson, and Machado, which we'll get into in a little bit. Let's talk about Jose Altuve, Gary, because last year around this time, you and I were talking about Jose Altuve. Is he a first-round pick? Is he a top 10 pick? And then all he did was go from 15 to 24 home runs, 86 runs to 108, 68 RBIs to 96. The average went from 314 to 338. He still stole 30 bags. So he's enough, obviously, for you to be a top 5 pick, top 3. Why did you decide to put him over Bryant and Arenado?
I mean, it might be an overreaction to last year and the year before that, but I kind of just sat myself down in, like, August. And I think I even wrote a little note at my desk that was just like, in 6 months, when you're doing your rankings, don't undervalue Jose Altuve like you do every single season.
That's so fair.
I mean, you look even at the Steamer projections right now. Like, Steamer has him at a .312 batting average, 16 home runs, 28 stolen bases, and 92 runs scored. I feel like most people
could
argue
that's not even fair.
That's kind of like a low-end Jose Altuve projection. And the thing there is that's a Steamer projection at 659 plate appearances, which is a lot of plate appearances. But this is a guy who has had more than that total the last four seasons. Each of the last four seasons, in fact, averaging 696 plate appearances those last four seasons, and he never strikes out. So they're not just plate appearances, they're at bats. Like, he's not someone who really draws all that many walks either. So he puts the ball into play, and that really comes in handy, especially with, like, runners in scoring position, because we look at, you know, we don't know yet whether Altuve is going to be batting second or third in that Astro lineup, and people could be a little concerned that he loses some of the run productivity, not batting leadoff. I mean, he didn't seem as enamored with the stolen base in the second half of the season, and maybe you can say, well, he took 60% of his plate appearances from the number three spot. Maybe they don't want him running as much anymore when the meat of the order is up. So I'm not too concerned about that kind of stuff, but I do think anything he loses in runs, he can make up for in RBIs. This is a guy who, with runners in scoring position last season, had a 6% strikeout rate, had a 2-walks-to-1 strikeout ratio. Like, he's going to put the ball in play. Kind of like your boy Albert Pujols. Like, the reason this guy gets so many RBIs is because Mike Trout's on base, and Pujols, to his credit, doesn't do a whole lot well anymore, but hits home runs and doesn't doesn't strike out, just puts the ball in play.
Right? Yeah, and I like the fact, I'm glad you brought this up, because we're used to seeing him in that leadoff spot, George Springer in the second half of the season, then Alex Bregman steps in. I like the fact that he goes to that three spot. You're right, maybe he loses some runs, but he's so good at making contact and just moving runners over that I feel like the RBI opportunities are there for him, and he's very underrated even at this point in his career, and I like the fact that you had to make the note.
Yeah.
Like, let's not undervalue Altuve again. Okay, so we saw 9 and 10, Donaldson and Machado, and if you look at these guys' numbers, they're very similar, apart from the stolen bases. Machado 2 years ago steals 20 bags and gets zero last year, and then you got J.D. Martinez, I was talking about him yesterday. Josh Donaldson with 7 stolen bases. There's a little bit of a gap in age, but why Donaldson over Machado? Would it change for you if you're playing in middle infield spots where you can put him at short? Does that change at all for you, or is it splitting hairs between these two, really?
I do like the shortstop eligibility, and that could be kind of like a tiebreaker-type situation with Manny Machado, because really, as you mentioned, these two players, incredibly similar. You go back to 2015, Josh Donaldson batting 291, Machado 290. Mm. Donaldson, 78 home runs, Machado, 72 home runs. The separation I find right now that puts Donaldson for me ahead of Machado is we've seen Donaldson consecutive seasons put up 122 runs scored. He is the elite run scorer the last two seasons. Now, people have question marks as to whether that Jay offense can be as elite now lacking Edwin Encarnacion, but I do see an uptick from Jose Bautista's numbers from last season. I think Kendrys Morales.
I like Morales a lot,
terrible base runner.
Yes.
Terrible defensive player, but the dude can still hit. And in fact, Bakota still likes the Jays to be a top five offense next season, so I don't think the runs are just going to disappear with Donaldson hitting from that number two spot in the lineup. Yeah. I mean, our mutual friend Jim Sonnes will tell you, it's the best place in baseball for a fantasy player to hit.
For sure.
And then even the stolen bases, you mentioned, like, I don't know where Machado is. I don't know where the Orioles are and Buck Showalter are as a team with stolen bases. Like, he could very well not attempt to steal any bases again next season. And Donaldson, not going to tear it up by any means, but has. He's 22 for 23 the last three seasons. Like, he's going to get you 7 to 8 steals. Like, that's not great, but when Machado is going with a goose egg, like, I think these little things matter. So I just have Donaldson edging out Machado.
Does the calf bother you at all? To me, at this point, it doesn't bother me. I like it as like a buying window. Maybe he's going to fall down a few spots and then I can get him instead of 10th overall and get him maybe 12th, 13th, 15th overall.
I think the worrisome thing would be that he had a calf injury towards the end of last season saw the numbers kind of decline in that second half. But even his declined numbers were like the 260 average wasn't nice, but this is someone who still had like a 380 WOBA in the second half despite the fact he wasn't playing up to his standards. So it's concerning, but I think, like you mentioned, the key here is that if it drops him to like 12th, 13th, 14th, that's a great buying window, especially in a 12-man league.
Yeah, you definitely have to jump on that. It's a long season. You're not going to win your fantasy baseball championship on draft day for sure. Okay, let's go through 11 to 20. There's some names on here that we saw in the first round, and I'm just going to really go right to Carlos Correa. You got Seager in there, Trey Turner we'll get to, Syndergaard, Bumgarner, Edwin, who changes homes to Cleveland from Toronto. Not much of a change with Edwin, but let's talk about Carlos Correa, because what we saw from him in 2015, 99 games, 22 home runs, 14 stolen bases. We're like, holy crap, over the full course of the year, what can this guy do? It basically just did the same thing. 153 games, 20 home runs, and 15 stolen bases. This is probably a fair spot for him compared to last year, though, correct?
Yeah, I think that right now, I mean, Correa last year, I was sort of out just because it was that first round value. The price tag was like the 5th or 6th or 7th pick in the draft because there was that like, oh man, this guy could do anything sort of like potential. Now we kind of see where he's going to be, and I think he could get better. Obviously, he's a very, very young player. He's very, very talented.
Yeah, I think he's better than this too.
But you know, probably gonna hit like 280, 285. Like, he could crack 300. He's that type of player. But I think it's interesting what we saw in the second half last season. It does give me a little bit of pause for Carlos Correa, just because the power was something that we thought he could be, like maybe a 30 home run guy. In the second half, he only hit 6 home runs, and that was because his ground ball to fly ball ratio went from like a 1.5 type number to a 2.18 figure. He had a 25% fly ball rate in the second half. Like, you really want a guy like Correa hitting more fly balls. And I mean, that's the same fly ball rate Ryan Braun had for the entirety of the season. Dude hit 30 home runs, took a 30% home run to fly ball ratio. Correa's was like 12%. So I'd like to see the numbers trend more towards him being not an extreme fly ball hitter, because the average is going to be there then, but like 35, 36, 37%. Something like that. So I would like to see that from Correa, but even if he doesn't do that, I think he's kind of like in that Ian Desmond mold of a couple of years back. He's like a 2020 player.
Yeah.
He's going to hit 280. The counting stats are going to be there in a great Houston offense. So I think he's fine now. This is like a good place for him to be. I'm not high, I'm not low on him.
Yeah.
It's just like where he should be going.
And he's only 22 years old, and he is just so fun to watch. Okay, Trey Turner, number 17. We're going to talk about Trey Turner basically all year.
Up until draft
day. Just up until draft day, and then we'll be going.
Keep
you got
going.
Trey Turner, or hey, you drafted Trey Turner, that sucks. But jokes aside, 13 home runs and 324 plate appearances last year. It took him 1,100. Well, he had 1,100 plate appearances in the minors to get 19. He had 8 home runs in September against very mediocre pitching. We know that he is a terrific talent. He has some pop. He has some speed. The average. Honestly, though, what do you project from him this year? What's a fair line? Like, what do you really expect? It's tough to judge.
Well, Steamer has him at 301 with 15 home runs, 40 stolen bases, and 88 runs scored. And I think that the stolen bases, that could actually be a modest estimate of his potential. I think the home runs, he doesn't even have to hit 15 home runs in return value here. Now, I should say, like, I have him at 17. You're not getting Trey Turner at 17.
No, you're not.
Like, at this point, he's, in fact, in a lot of these even, like, expert league drafts, going ahead of guys like Josh Donaldson and Manny Machado. That's a little rich for my blood. I want to see it. I just can't buy into someone who had 300 plate appearances last season. It's not like a David Dahl situation, because we know he's going to be hitting at the top of the lineup. He has an everyday spot in that lineup, a very, very good lineup in Washington. But I think I'm a little more reserved on him. I have him behind Correa. I have him behind Seager, just guys I think who are better overall offensive players. But he could still hit like 9 home runs. Like, he could basically put up the stat line we saw last year from Starling Marte.
Yeah.
And be a guy who brings back second round value. So I think that's fine. And that's even the reason I have Marte kind of in that same class of player with Trey Turner right now. But I think the one thing with Turner in that Steamer projection that I kind of like, just even as like an upside type thing, and again, this is not upside you're getting in the first round. This would be upside you're getting in the second round. But 88 runs scored for Turner, I think that's a really low estimate. Like, I think especially if Bryce Harper can turn this around.
And you expect him to.
And you expect him to. And I even Daniel Murphy, like a little bit of regression for Murphy, but that's a really good lineup they have in Washington, even adding Matt Wieters right now to play catcher. Like, I think 88 runs, if he's batting leadoff, that's a low estimate. This guy should be able to crack 100.
And Dusty Baker has him right now penciled in as his leadoff guy, not Adam Eaton. So if he does, in fact, lead off, he can certainly get 100 runs. I just think it's terrific what you said, but it's just the fact that don't reach on him.
No.
I mean, he's great. He's going to return value, but don't reach on him like 10.
But it's kind of like Correa last season. I feel like if you don't reach on him, you probably don't get him. So he's that type of player. Now, we saw it last season with Correa. It didn't really work out with Carlos Correa. So maybe that's kind of the model I'm using in my head. But I do think the one thing he does that Correa didn't do last season, and we didn't think Correa could do last season, he's going to be elite in steals.
Let's rapid fire through this last one, 21-30. The one guy that I want to talk about the most is Jonathan Villar. His stats are just unbelievable. You got him right there at 26. This is fair. You see the eligibility that he has. Career-high home runs, doubles, ISO, BABIP, average, stolen base, only seems to regress, but he's still going to return value even if he just does close to that.
Yeah,
forget the 19 home runs. Maybe he gets 10.
We kind of talked about this with Turner. Like, that ilk of player, like, he's going to steal 50 bases. Yeah. So already he's bringing back elite value in a category. I think he's more like a 250 hitter.
Yeah.
Because he's going to strike out 26, 27% of the time. So you can't bat 280 and strike out that often. It's just so rare to have that combination. So I think the average regresses a little bit. But the power, it's kind of interesting. Like, obviously 19 home runs would be a lot to expect from him this year. But you go back to, like, even 2014. He had 268 at-bats that season with the Astros. Hit 7 home runs. That's a home run every single 37 at-bats. Last season was a home run every 31 at-bats. I mean, it's not like it's that different. We've seen this before. We just never got to see it across a full season. So I think that VR is someone who I kind of trust right now, which is weird to say.
Yeah.
He's not usually the type of player I trust, but I feel like he's someone like where Trey Turner's got like the helium. People are scared of VR, so you can get him a little later than I think he should be going.
Yeah, switch hitting machine, man, against righties, he pulls with some power, and lefties, he just slaps singles.
Like, I think I'd rather have him a round and a half later than Trey Turner. Sometimes 2 rounds later.
We got to get out of here. Glenn Lowy is in here next. We're talking high-stakes baseball. Stick around. Welcome back inside the Fantasy Sports Network studios. I'm Chris Meany. This is Fantasy Sports Today. It's high stakes week, and it's no better guy to talk to than Glenn Lowy, a 2-time Fantasy Cup winner, Fantasy Football World Champion. Glenn, how's it going? Welcome to Fantasy Sports Today.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Chris. It's going well.
Glenn, I just want to ask you, like, what's your secret to consistency? Every year, you're just near the top. I mean, what is it? Like, give me the secrets, man. I want to know what it's all about.
Well, you know, a lot of prayer.
we seem to have lost you there. You still there?
Still there, Glenn? Still here.
Okay, a lot of prayer, and then you just cut out. No, you don't want to tell me the secrets to success.
the man above doesn't want me to give that away. But, you know, I was kidding on the prayer, well, at least a little bit. But, you know, there is a lot of good fortune involved in being near the top. year after year for anybody who has that kind of consistency. But I think even more than good fortune and more than a lot of wish making and prayer is actual studying and preparation. And the more you prepare, the more you study, the better off you'll be when the time comes to make your picks. And I think that that more than anything separates those who do well year in, year out against those who don't.
Glenn, what are some trends that you see in some of these high-stakes leagues? I mean, you know, zero RB started before in a high-stakes league for fantasy football. Are there any trends that you see that you could just share with us?
Well, I think the biggest trend, and it's not a new trend, but it's definitely different from the early years of rotisserie baseball or fantasy baseball. Just like the zero running back strategy is a difference from the early years of fantasy football, is that pitching is so much more important and considered an option for early rounds. When back in the day, everyone built their offense, they built their hitting, and they tried to manage their pitching later on in the drafts and through free agency because pitching was so inconsistent. There were so many injuries involved with pitchers that, you know, the best players and the experts and so on and so forth would keep away from pitchers early on and go with the more consistent hitters, which were easier to bank on. As in recent years, the best players have gone away from that safe route and gone after early round pitching and rolled the dice on them because they found you need those great aces in order to compete against the best players in overall contests. And dual A strategies have made their way into the hobby and is followed by quite a few players these days.
You know, you just talked about how you treat pitching. How do you treat stolen bases? We just talked earlier about Trey Turner, Jonathan Villar. How do you treat a guy like Billy Hamilton and chasing stolen bases? 58 last year, 57 the year before. Do you want a guy like Hamilton, or do you want a bunch of guys that just get you 10 to 15 stolen bases and just accumulate them that way?
Me personally, I usually do not chase after a Hamilton-type player. I mean, it is, during a draft, very comforting to get those 50, 60 stolen bases in the bank. You know, when you do your projections, you know, that sure gets you far along in that category. The problem, though, with going for a player like that, he is very one-dimensional, and he will only help you in stolen bases. And you have to spend a very early round pick on him. For somebody like Billy Hamilton, you're not getting him after the fourth or fifth round this year because of the impact he can have on that one category. But the problem is, that's the only category he will really have an impact. So if something happens to, let's say, his legs, he gets an injury or something else that slows down his stolen base production, you know, he's not contributing in any other way. Or if, let's say, you were doing very well in that category, it's not like you can keep him in there because he's not going to help you anywhere else. So he's a very limited player. The other problem with going after a guy like Hamilton, you know, as people who had drafted D. Gordon last year saw, you know, if you draft someone like D. Gordon and Billy Hamilton, you're counting on them for half your stolen bases. Something happens to them, you're not making that up in free agency. So it's kind of a dangerous route and one that hurt the D. Gordon drafts last year.
Yeah, definitely. Glenn, unfortunately, we only have about 30 seconds. Maybe just a yes or no. Are you worried about Max Scherzer's finger because this guy just keeps falling in drafts?
100% I'm worried about it.
Oh, okay.
You know, you're talking about someone's right arm, a pitcher that you have to invest a first or early second round pick for. You don't want questions out of a pitcher going that early. You want it to be a short thing.
Fair enough, Glenn. We really appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Good luck if you're drafting this season, and I know you are, and we'll talk again soon, man.
You be good, Chris. Thank you.